hard-pressed to find somebody in today's America unfamiliar with Dr. Martin Luther King's iconic I Have a Dream speech. That speech, which teachers play in classrooms all over the country, was a critical moment in the civil rights movement. But scholars say the message has been misinterpreted over the years. Politicians and members of the public have selectively highlighted the less radical parts of Dr. King's speeches over the years, obscuring his anti-racist philosophies and calls to action. Joining us now to help answer some of these questions about Dr. King's legacy is Peniel Joseph, a professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. He's also author of The Third Reconstruction, America's Struggle for Racial Justice in the 21st Century. Welcome back to Here and Now, Peniel.
Thank you for having me, Deepa.
So let's start with the I Have a Dream speech from 1963. Obviously, undeniably, a very powerful speech. But I'm wondering what we get wrong about King's message and philosophy when we focus solely on the I Have a Dream line.
Well, that's extraordinarily correct. That I Have a Dream speech from August 28, 1963 is really a call to action. He says and begins that speech by saying, "Now is the time to make real the promise of democracy." It's important to give us context. The summer of 63, just like the summer of 2020, there were extraordinary protests happening, thousands of different demonstrations all over the United States, arrests, turbulence from coast to coast. And in that speech, he outlines the problem of racial injustice, its connection and origins in racial slavery. He says we're going to have to struggle together, protest together, go to jail together. He talks about reparations. He says we come here today to cash a check that has been stamped insufficient funds, but we refuse to believe that the Bank of American Democracy is bankrupt. So that's a speech that really pushes us, but certainly by the end of the speech, he talks optimistically, as one would do, about the world he hopes to see. And that's where you get to the I Have a Dream portion, which unfortunately is the only thing we remember nationally about the speech.
Why is that? Is kind of that the easiest part for white America to focus on? Is it as simple as that?
Well, I think we all made an unfortunate bargain when King's holiday became federalized in 1983. And what we'd got in exchange for the holiday was really the sanitization of King's image. So we got basically sort of a very specific version and vision of King over what now is the last 40 years, Deepa, that is a sort of just a pro-American king, a king who's really very much soft around the edges, who would have given all of us sort of great big kisses and hugs if he were alive today.
Yeah.
And we don't get the anti-war king. We don't get the king who's anti-imperialist, the king who's criticizing capitalism. And yes, that king who's very pointed in his disappointment about white moderates.
Let's go in and listen around a part of a speech, Other America, from 1967, which was given just months before he died. And this is somewhat speaking to the tactics that protesters can use. Let's take a listen.
A riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity.
I mean, it's so powerful to hear his voice. And, it reminds me a little bit, Peniel, of what we heard from so many anti-racist leaders during the 2020 racial justice protests. But we also saw politicians use Dr. King's words to condemn these very same activists for their actions and tactics. It just strikes me as, hypocritical.
Oh, certainly. It's an Orwellian take on Dr. King. You use the social justice leader, the revolutionary leader, words against contemporary revolutionaries. I think that quote is great, and it reminds me of the letter from Birmingham Jail where he says he's reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's greatest stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the White Citizens Council or the Ku Klux Klan, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice. So I think what's so interesting about King is that he really pushes us. And for him, nonviolent civil disobedience, it's both a personal philosophy and a practical strategy, but it's also a very confrontational strategy. I think one of the reasons he gets into debates with Malcolm X, and here's where Malcolm X is actually wrong, and I've written a book on both of them, is that nonviolence is actually very, very courageous. So the folks who were in Birmingham, the folks who were organizing the Poor People's Campaign, those who were in Selma, they, by the hundreds and thousands, put their bodies on the line to illustrate to the entire world that the system of racial segregation and poverty and miseration was unjust and immoral. And so when we think about King, King is really this protest leader who's the most extraordinary revolutionary mobilizer of the 20th century, in the sense that he's mobilizing all these local movements that are already being led by Black women and men of the time. But he's very, very confrontational. Where he sees poverty, he wants to eradicate it. Where he sees injustice, he calls it out. Where he sees racism, he speaks up and speaks truth to power.
So, Peniel, I want you to tell us quickly about Dr. King and his anti-capitalist thoughts and philosophies, because that's also something we don't hear much about today.
From the time he was young, King was reading about social democratic philosophy and leaders. He was reading about capitalism and its contradictions. And so by the time we look at the Riverside Address, April 4th, 1967, King says that racism, materialism, and militarism are the triple evils facing humanity. King really comes out as a social democrat and says his philosophy is a social democracy, the kind you would find in Scandinavian countries. So he's interested in redistributive justice. He feels that capitalism as it stands in the 1960s is too exploitative, too unequal, too racist to work for all people. So when we think about King, we have to think about him as somebody who is a anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, revolutionary abolitionist. He was against systems of injustice, unfair systems of policing, punishment, prisons, prosecution, and poverty. He's the foremost revolutionary leader of the 20th century. When we lose sight of that, we lose sight of the potential impact that his words both had in the 1950s and 60s, but can continue to have in our own time.
So how do we begin to relearn what Dr. King really stood for?
I think we have to read his words very, very carefully. I would start with Letter from the Birmingham Jail. That's an extraordinary letter. And when you read that, you get a much better sense of King's, his intellect, his compassion, but also the fierce urgency of now, which he spoke of. He's really a passionate individual as well as a compassionate one. And we get a better sense of the moral and political compass he had for redistributive justice, for human rights, citizenship, dignity for all of us. So we have to read his own words, but I would start with Letter from Birmingham Jail.
Peniel Joseph is a professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Deepa. I enjoyed it.